This is the Soccer Nomad Podcast. On this episode, I'm joined by the guys from the U.S. Soccer Feed account. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves?
I'm Andrew.
And I'm William.
All right. So there's a third guy, Anthony. No, Aaron.
Aaron,
and he couldn't be here today. But today I wanted to talk to these guys about the U.S. national team. You know, the Copa America is now over. We've had a little time to digest and cool. Well, speaking for myself, I've had a chance to cool down because Argentina, I was pretty hot.
Yeah, they lit into us.
That's right. So let's start with Copa America Centenario. Look at it as a tournament as a whole. So I reached out to listeners of the podcast and friends on Twitter and Facebook, and I asked them on a scale of 1 to 5, rate the United States performance at Copa America Centenario. The responses were pretty interesting. Most scores were in the 3 to 4 range, which I kind of found interesting. There was, you know, like one or two in the twos, and somebody gave him a 5, but it wasn't like all over the place. Yeah. But a couple of replies stood out to me. Eric Walcott, he's a member of Sons of Ransom up in Lansing, Michigan. He gave the U.S. a 2 for performance and a 4.5 for results. We got good results to make a run for fourth, but really didn't put any, any complete performances with the exception of the Costa Rica game. So we're gonna come back to that point. I thought that was a good point. So Kelly Carter posted, given the roster selection, injuries, card trouble, and group given, I would give us a 4.5. Jurgen did a great job with the lineups. As much as I want to see more of the youth play, he did what he had to do, which is playing the best 11 you have at the time. The players played well despite having to adapt to a faster, more technical style soccer. I believe this shows us where we lack in ability and depth. So her point about now versus the future, we're definitely going to come back to. Yeah. So I want to get, you know, some quick thoughts from you guys. You guys were on the Mouth of the South podcast for each game. You guys sort of did a post-tournament wrap-up, so that's all good stuff. Go back to the Mouth of the South podcast and check that out. But what were your quick thoughts here?
I think if you start off with a what did you expect as to what happened. And if you go back to the original prediction thing, we were all hoping just to get out of the group, win the group if possible. It was kind of an outside chance. Then, obviously, you look at how it breaks down and who you play in the next round, and it kind of looks like we were going to play Brazil, more than likely. Well, obviously, things change, and we ended up playing Ecuador again. Well, if you look at the totality of the event, we got to the semifinal, which if you had asked anybody beforehand, then they would have been happy with the semifinal. It didn't matter what happened in the semifinal, but what happens is sometimes we focus on the last taste in the mouth, which is the loss, the dismantling by Argentina, and again the Colombia loss, which I actually kind of think we outplayed them and probably should have won the game, but I think the last taste in the mouth kind of ruined a lot. But when you distance yourself from it and look at the whole Copa America, you kind of like, okay, well, there's progress, and it actually was a good tournament for us.
Yep.
If I had to give it a number, I'd probably give it a 3.5. I do feel like in a lot of the games, Ecuador being the one and the Paraguay, the results sometimes outweighed how we actually played. That being said, it's a results-driven business like, you know, every other sport. And playing beautiful soccer is, you know, the second most important thing behind winning. And, I mean, that's kind of been a staple of Klinsmann. You know, you look at the 2014 World Cup, we didn't play the most beautiful soccer, but we got out of the group. I mean, I know he came in and promised beautiful soccer, but if he's going to come in and we're going to get results, you can't complain. Looking at the program as a whole, are we better than we were before? Yes and no. There was a lot of positives to take out individually. I feel like Jossie Zardes played pretty well. Bobby Wood played very well. Even though I believe he only scored one goal in the tournament, just Bobby Wood is a person you can look at and say, okay, Copa Centenario 2016 was a success because Bobby Wood really stepped up and became a key figure.
Yeah, absolutely. We're definitely going to talk about Bobby Wood in a bit. I agree about sort of the how you saw the tournament. Like, we started poorly. I mean, that first Colombia game was bad. Right, but then we sort of picked up momentum, and then everything changed. Like, we went in, like, once we beat Ecuador, like, we can do this. I mean, like, all the, the Fox guys were like, we're going to be Argentina. And then, I'm listening to like podcasts, like, well, we can do this and we've got this. And then, well, even, we don't have the guys, so we're definitely have to bunker in, but we can, and then I was like, wow, we could do this. And then, like, 3 minutes
Course,
in,
we, yeah.
it's unraveled. And see, it's a, the last taste, the sort of that last moment that the Argentina game and the Colombia game sort of took away that nice feeling we had.
Yeah, it left a bad aftertaste.
Yeah.
But I feel like you have to be reasonable and look at, for instance, Mexico lost 7-0 to Chile.
I mean, yeah, we could
As
have done
beautiful
that.
as that was, as great as that was to watch, it really does show just the difference in just class between CONCACAF and CONMEBOL. And that's something we have to look at, and we have to be reasonable. And it's like, we think of ourselves as one level. We spoke about this in the Mouth South podcast. Yeah, we look at ourselves as a higher level than we actually are. And at the end of the day, we shouldn't be. I feel like it's just wrong for us as fans to look at us and be like, no, we should be able to play beautiful soccer against Argentina when very few teams in the world can play beautiful soccer against Argentina.
Right.
And I mean, we should be expecting ourselves to beat a lot of these lower level CONMEBOL teams. But when it comes to Chile, even, Brazil, Argentina, we just have to be realistic, And that's something I believe. It's like, we shouldn't look at a 4-0 loss to
One
one
of
of
the
the top
best
five teams
teams.
in the world and say, oh, I mean, even though they lost the final, they're still one of the top five teams in the world. And you can't look at that loss and be like, well, it was a failure because we didn't play well. You just can't do that as a fan. You got to be realistic.
Yeah, listening to the Mouths of South podcast, that's in my notes. I liked your mirror comment. I think that that's a good way to talk about that. And how do we see ourselves? But then, what are we really? Like, when we look in the mirror, we need to look at correctly. Not we don't want we can't see what we want to see. We have to see what actually is. And you guys also talked about a change in attitude, and I think that that's important too. Is we thought a lot of fans thought we were going to beat Argentina. But they win the three straight major finals. I mean, this is a, I
Yeah,
mean, and
they're a well-established,
they
well-oiled
haven't. This
machine.
is like one of their best teams, probably since Maradona. And we're not just going to walk in and punch them in the mouth. That's not how this works. And in terms of attitude, sort of that scrappy, that we don't have the edge. And it's really, you guys talked a little bit about that. And the other thing you guys talked about was we need to play these players more. That's why this tournament was nice. We need to keep running into these guys and say, oh, we still have work to do.
Honestly, and I talked about it at the very beginning of the tournament. If a situation presented itself where we were playing in Brazil or in Argentina, I relish those opportunities because, at the end of the day, it would have been great to win the Copa America. But if we had not faced Argentina, Colombia, or any of those teams along the way, we had faced a Peru, a Paraguay. If we had faced those kinds of teams to win it almost is like, yeah, but how good are we really? Are we that good because we won the tournament, or are we that good because we didn't play Argentina or Brazil or any of those teams? So I use those opportunities to kind of use it as a measuring stick because I want to know how good we are. And the other thing, I think a lot of Americans, I don't think, and this may be an unpopular opinion, but I don't think we're at a point in the soccer world where we can take results and say, oh, well, we won, but it didn't look good. It's like, I'm happy with results because, in all honesty, I don't care that we played poorly in the World Cup. We got through that group, which nobody thought we would do, and we pushed Belgium to the very brink. And I don't care if we're not Brazil, where we can win a World Cup and say, yeah, but we didn't play it like the Brazilians. We didn't play
Yoga Benito.
Yeah, Yoga Benito. I mean, that's not where we're at. We don't have that luxury right now.
And it's crazy to expect that from a team. When you look at the Euros, you watched France have 33% possession against Germany and win the game. And you got France with some of the best midfielders in the world. France has could have a field a team of 11 players who didn't make the Euro squad and still be better than the United States. And they kind of swallowed their pride and said, you know what? Germany's a dang good team. We're going to sit back and we're going to counterattack. And that's how they won the game. And I mean, if France can sit back, and say we're not going to play beautiful soccer and we're going to win this game, we shouldn't be expecting the United States to do it against a far better team like an Argentina.
Right. Yeah, it's just an American arrogance, I would say,
which is good. I like it. I like an arrogance as a fan base.
That's what we do.
But it tends to drift towards the unrealistic and far out.
So that's sort of performance versus results. You guys touched on this. We got the results. Maybe not the performances, but we did get several good results. We beat the teams that we were supposed to beat.
And we challenged the Colombia in the end. And, I mean, people can say a third-place game doesn't mean a whole lot, but it didn't look like Colombia was like, oh, we're just happy. We're just kind of content being here, whatever.
And if we'd have scored a goal at the very end and won in overtime or PKs or whatever, it wouldn't have been an unfair result, you know?
Right.
And so we can look at that and say we went toe-to-toe with Colombia.
Yeah, and even in the course of one tournament, you look at the very beginning to the very last game, Colombia versus Colombia, even the improvement – from the beginning to the end was a marked improvement. You know, you could see the progress even coming off a 4-0 Argentina loss.
Right. So let's look ahead the next 6 months. So World Cup qualifiers are next. We've got St. Vincent and the Grenadines away on September 2nd. And then September 6th, we're home to Trinidad and Tobago and Jacksonville. So in theory, United States could qualify on September 2nd, but it could also get tricky very, very quickly. So Guatemala is going to Trinidad and Tobago. That United States win and a Guatemala loss, United States is in.
Yeah.
But then if the United States does not win, they would have to beat Trinidad and Tobago because Guatemala's got the Vinci Heat, and you would expect them to win. Thoughts on the World Cup qualifiers?
You got to win the games. Like, you know, it's nothing against the teams we are playing, but this is not Argentina. You don't have to play beautiful soccer. You have to beat these teams. There's no excuse for not beating. I know we lost a game earlier, but you just can't lose a game to these teams. You've got to get.
No, and I expect us just to take care of these next two games in quick succession. I mean, if anything, the Guatemala game may have been a blessing in disguise because it was a wake-up call.
It was.
Because now Klinsmann has every motivational edge right now to say, look, you know, you take a game off, a team like Trinidad and Tobago could beat you. I mean, and that's always going to be the case in CONCACAF. CONCACAF is such that it's a different animal, and any team really can, because they all play ugly soccer. And
in Trinidad and Tobago, it's such a tiny country, but they've got some athletes. They had players in the Premier League a couple years ago. I mean, they're not a pushover team. That being said, we still have to beat them.
Right. Right. So they have a friendly. United States has a friendly on October 7th against Cuba. In Cuba, there's a lot of political and other baggage that goes along with that. We're not going to talk about that. So let's assume that we go through. The hex starts in November. They just did the draw for that. We could, if results go certain ways, we could open up against Mexico, which is kind of crazy.
Wow. I would love to play Mexico before they get back on track.
Yeah.
And then, so that'll take us through November. There's two rounds of that. And then, of course, there's Camp Cupcake in January of 2017. We assume the United States qualifies. We're going to be in the hex. But honestly, I'm a little worried about this hex because, you know, usually the plan is win your home games, draw away. But there's, like, these weird, like, Costa Rica's kind of down, but, like, Panama's been giving us problems.
And that's what I said. In CONCACAF, it's a physical, ugly style of play that it makes it tricky because the aggression and it just kind of throws you off your game sometimes. It's not pretty, and that's how bad. And honestly, that's how bad teams beat good teams, is they ugly the game up. And you never see bad teams outplay a good team by playing beautiful soccer. It's never going to happen. So they have to ugly the game up as much as possible to get a result and grind out a result. And if things don't go your way, the field, the stadium, everything, there's just a lot of weird off the field factors on the field that outside of the actual game itself that make CONCACAF in general just a tricky bunch of landmines.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I know we're going to talk about the youth versus experience type debate, but one problem is you really can't put as much as, even with the Trinidad and Tobago, we should be able to beat this team every time. You can't put youth in this game, though, you know, especially the away game. Like, the ultimate example would be the debut of Timmy Chandler against Honduras at Honduras, where he just got literally eaten alive, you know. And that's a this is probably a debate for another day, but it's going to be very interesting to see through the hex how many of these young players can break through.
Yeah, let's jump into that. Let's try to figure out our roster for World Cup 2018. So again, I reached out to fans about, who they would like to see dropped and added. So in terms of being, the players that need to be removed from the US player pool, most responded Wando and Beckerman. I mean, that makes sense, right? So then there was a little rumbling about Bradley and Deuce, right? Bradley's come under a lot of fire, we'd say in the last 6 months to a year. Does that sound fair?
I mean, well, with Andrew, it's been a little bit longer, but with most people, it's been 6 months to a
So,
year.
Justin Kane posted that Jozy Altidore, Michael Bradley, Clint Dempsey, Wando, Jones, Howard, and Beckerman, the first two need to drastically improve, so that'd be Altidore and Bradley before World Cup 2018. The other five will be too old for Russia, so we need to stop leaning on them as a crutch. Preach. So Cole Smith and at poolside_25 mentioned that maybe we need a reboot, a goalkeeper. I want to get from you guys, do we need a reboot or we need some tweaks?
Well, goalkeeper, I think we're fine. Like, I don't worry about goalkeeper too much because,
I mean, Brad Guzan played well. I mean, you can fault him for this or that. Okay, the Gold Cup 2015, yes, you can fault him for that. But since then, what has he really done, you know? And, I mean, who's going to really come up and take a spot? Because we had the Sean Johnsons and the Bill Hamids. They were kind of coming up, but neither of them have really stepped, like, really proven themselves at
Because,
a
in all
higher level.
honesty, if, and if they don't, do you would you rather? It's like, okay, who do you feel more comfortable with?
Yes.
Would you rather Guzan or would you rather Hamid or
And
these other guys?
I don't want to oversimplify it too much, but, like, at the end of the day, even with the demotion of Aston Villa, he's playing in the championship. And he's got what, 5, 6, 7 years of EPL experience against a few MLS guys. And if they're not gonna make the jump and go to Europe and play at a high level, they're just not gonna surpass him until he gets older.
So I was listening to a podcast. I forget. Sorry, I listen to a lot, so I forget which one. But they talked about whoever was talking about. Okay, so you got your Howard, Raimondo, Guzan, right up there. They're doing their thing. But then he kept waiting for that Johnson Hamid battle, because right that now it's a drop off to maybe William Yarborough or Ethan Horvath or a bunch of other people.
And
Like
you
there's
definitely
not
don't feel
that
comfortable with
there's
them.
not like you said, you can't throw him in the fire right now. So, I mean, maybe Guzan gets us to 2018.
Yeah, for all his faults, he's still the best option. And you don't want to just change it just because you want to change it.
Yeah, and if he goes, and I think part of it is almost a personality thing. With Tim Howard, he had that rah-rah personality. Everybody wanted to wear the Tim Howard jersey. And he's out there, sometimes getting in trouble for saying some. They couldn't put a mic next to him because he's out there yelling and screaming. And almost to a fault, Guzan's not that type of player. He's not as loud. He's not as in your face. And as a fan, it's maybe not as. He's almost not the sexy pick, you know? But I mean, that being said, he's proven himself over a long time in the Premier League, playing very well. Last year was a rough year, obviously, but
It was a rough year for
well,
that whole
yeah.
team.
But that being said,
So
nobody's keeping him
if you
up.
take a look at this roster, Tim Howard, I think, should, give him and Kyle Beckerman and Wando the watch. The nice plaque, send them on their way. I would have done after the 2014 World Cup. I guess I want to get your guys' take on Jermaine Jones.
I like Jermaine Jones. 2018 is a different story. But see, here's the other issue with these guys is I think fans want to cut ties with them now.
But
But
now is
like
not
we
the
were just
time.
talking about in that with those games in CONCACAF and the Hex and stuff, these kind of guys are very valuable because they
Yes.
understand that.
And the thing is, okay,
Now, I'm not
Europe.
saying don't infuse the young guys, but you got to keep a Jermaine Jones. Even Beckerman's
Yeah.
valuable in some of these kinds of games.
No, I mean, I'm saying Europe 1-0 against Panama, against even Mexico, Costa Rica. Europe 1-0 in the 80th minute. What player in the player pool would you rather bring on to solidify the midfield? I mean, it's going to be Beckerman, you know?
I like him
And
as a sub. I just worry that we're going to roll these guys out as starters for all these games.
that, I mean.
I agree with your point about the experience. I like them in the pool. I'm sorry. I could accept them in the pool. I'm tired.
You don't want the whole team to be incorporated by those guys.
Yes.
Another thing, I was actually listening to a podcast. It's the Total Soccer Show. And they were talking about, I believe it was the Paraguay game. It was a very high-level, intense game. And some of the players kind of looked out of sorts. Obviously, Jermaine Jones did go just completely stupid in the next game. But in the Paraguay game, he was still – he loved it. This was his type of yep. – you know, CONCACAF was just made for Jermaine Jones.
Mm.
And they called it a Jermaine Jones 10. They said that the whole intensity went to Jermaine Jones 10. And Dempsey and players like Dempsey – I mean, even Michael Bradley to an extent just reveled in it, you know, and played pretty well. But then you got some of the other guys, a lot of, you know, I hate to get on this tangent, but the European-based players who are not used to this CONCACAF level struggled, you know. You know, some of the players, it's like these young players are really being trod by fire,
mm-hmm.
but you can't do that in the Hex, you know. And it's like we're going to need players like a Clint Dempsey, like a Jermaine Jones to get us through the Hex. And both, I know Dempsey's, I believe, 33, Jermaine Jones is, I believe, 34. And will they be able to play at 35 and 36? Probably not. Will they both be on the roster? I believe there's a good chance both of them will be on the roster.
I don't think there's any chance Beckerman's going to be on the roster.
Yeah, Beckerman's probably. Because
he was a fringe player in this last World Cup.
Here's my soapbox moment, because for me, we talked about results now as opposed to playing for the future. For me, all this trial by fire is what the Gold Cup in 2015 should have been, and this
kind of was. I mean.
Well, yes. Yeah, so yeah. John Brooks and who was his partner?
Ventura Alvarado.
Yeah. Alvarado's sinking. Brooks, Brooks is like
a
totally
different
player.
He's somebody we haven't spoken about enough in this podcast so far. But
like that's what we should have taken those guys and played them every game regardless of what happened, because we still had the, whatever we're calling it, the CONCACAF Cup thing against Mexico. Well, there was no pressure.
Yeah.
That is what he should have done, is just play the you know.
But see, here's...
And then in Copa, in this one, same thing. Now you may bring in Jermaine Jones, especially since, I mean, I'm not Jermaine Jones' biggest fan, but what he's doing for Colorado and what he did in this tournament, you cannot argue with.
Right.
But you bring him back in to give him that Jermaine Jones 10 intensity, this CONCACAF grit that you talk about. We should have played our young guys and then bring back in the experience Copa in sort of a balance. But you're right, now we're stuck. And now that's what upsets me more than anything, is now we're stuck. Because we can't roll out Pulisic every game.
Yeah.
We can't – I mean, we have to assume that Darlington Nagby can do the business, but we have no idea. We're going to talk about some players here in a minute. We don't know, and that's what frustrates me to no end, is like now we had this chance. We had this chance, and we wasted it, and now –
And I know that this probably doesn't. It may. I honestly don't know how it factors in, but it goes to the perception of fans and what they want, because people will scream for the youth movement, but then get mad if we lose.
Yeah, because we lost 4-0 playing our best lineup against Argentina. We weren't going to run it.
Well, we would probably not even get. I don't know.
We wouldn't
get to
Argentina,
if, because I think Ecuador may beat us.
With Ventura Alvarado as a center back, probably. I mean,
yeah, I think. See, that's where, from a fan's perspective, I mean, you know, you're going on with the coaching perspective and what probably should be done, but at the same time, these people who've called into our show and we've spoken to online, they want all this, but it's like you can't have your cake and eat it too. You know,
for me, I get what you're saying about results. I don't care about the results.
Right. Okay. And that's kind of defining your terms. If you don't care about the results and you want the youth movement, okay.
Something I'd really love to know, which we'll never know, is how much pressure there is on Klinsmann. Because there, I mean,
I think if we win the Gold Cup last year, I think you probably see a youth movement in this world. I mean, in this Copa America.
Because that would have been his past. See, I would have used the leverage he had after 2014, because no one... I mean,
yeah,
I'm sure hardcore U.S. fans both thought we were going to get out of that group. But the way in which we did it, you know, we didn't play awesome against Belgium, but, you know, Tim Howard kept us in it.
We literally had a chance.
Like, for me, I get what Jurgen can talk all he wants, because I don't believe a word he says. But if he primes everything for the World Cups, I'm all for it, but you better deliver.
Yeah.
And now I'm saying, you're looking at 2018, and maybe he's got the master plan. I was talking to somebody like, maybe this is all part of his master plan. And in 2018, we're in the semifinals somehow because of whatever.
Right.
I want to go back to the Bobby Wood part
yeah.
at this point, because Bobby Wood, I did not like Bobby Wood.
I don't
I
think anybody
understand what
did.
he did, but when he first came out, I really did not like him. I threw several glasses at the TV. I was not a big fan, but he obviously saw something. Again, he has not broadened the player pool in the ways probably Arena really did and Bradley kind of did. But like Bobby Wood, I mean,
came out of nowhere. Like nobody had any idea where this guy came from.
I know you guys got the Bobby Wood curse.
Yes.
Talk about that real
Would
quick.
You like to explain?
I guess it was what, 2 years ago, two summers ago.
It was the Netherlands game. So
the
it'd be
Netherlands,
2014.
Yeah, the Netherlands game. When we were down, I don't even remember what 3-2, and Bobby Wood came on, and we were like, oh well. Klinsmann has no idea what he's doing. And, I mean, this is where our fandom comes out. I know we talk and we, like, separate ourselves from fans, but we're fans, too. And when we saw that in that moment, we're like, oh, man, what good is this going to do?
Know, and the thing was, it was just like he had shown nothing. And I remember there was a game a couple months before that where Bobby Wood was playing next to Josie Altidore. And Josie Altidore, like, vastly outplayed him and out-hustled him, no less. And I was like, okay, I can't do this anymore. You know, and I was like, I'm done with him. And the funny thing was, I think it was the other guy in our group tweeted out on the U.S. Soccer Feed page something along the lines of, if he scores, I'm never or if he scores, I'm never going to, you know, I'll delete my account or something. And I responded, and I texted him. I said, well, he's going to score, and it's going to be funny. And then, he does,
yep.
Minutes later.
And we won that game, didn't
and
we?
And we ended up winning the game. John Brooks scored.
It was one of those weird games
game.
Where all the players that we had kind of thrown under the bus.
Danny Williams, I believe, scored in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He ripped one way out.
From a stupid distance.
And then, obviously, that was where the curse was born,
yeah.
Was we, like, you know, we say that he was going to be awful.
It's
and
like a reverse
been,
jinx, basically.
He's literally been, he from that moment, he's been...
projecting straight up.
So
we like to take credit for it.
Yeah.
Awesome. So we got Bobby Wood. We got John Brooks. We've got, you know, Yedlin goes to England, learns how to defend, couples that with his speed and service. Now we've got something. You know, Giassi's artist is coming along. Those are positives. Let's move on to players that we think should be added either to the roster or to the pool. Responses from social media were all over the place. I mean, there's a laundry list. I mean, we've got, you know, obviously Jordan Morris, Trapp, Finley, right. Kiesewetter, Miazga, Lehigh, Heineman. Justin again tweeted in Tim Ream and Danny Williams. I thought that was kind of interesting. He also threw in Zlalem. I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sold on that guy. But, you know, Mike Grella, Kellen Acosta. You know, giving Perry Kitchen more of a chance. On my list, there's Morales in the midfield. I like Polster from Chicago Fire. Positionally flexible, seems to have a little, you know, a little grit to him.
Right.
Wouldn't mind seeing him in there. What do you guys think? Like, is there, like, one guy, two guys, three guys that, like, screw it, we need this guy either in the pool or starting every game?
For me, I watched the U-20 World Cup. I believe it was, 2015, yeah. And Emerson Heineman played next to Gideon Zlalem. Both of them, in my opinion, look like they could be starters one day. I believe Emerson Heineman should be really pushing a Jermaine Jones or Michael Bradley right now.
Mm.
He's gotten, I want to say, almost 2 full years of experience playing in the championship. He's moving to the Premier League. If he can get regular time in the Premier League, I don't see why he can't. He's playing for Bournemouth. I don't see why he can't start for the United States or at least get some time. He's physically, he's still relatively small, but he's getting bigger. He handles himself, from a physical standpoint, much better than his size. So once he actually does put on weight, I feel like...
He's basically, when I watch him, and granted, the level of competition is...
Because I've seen him play twice in the championship, so I can't really say I have a large...
Right, right. Well, the way he dominates competition, not dominates in the traditional sense of like he stands out, but in the sense of the way he dictates and controls a game from the midfield... he's composed on the ball. He's not. He plays within himself, something that Michael Bradley doesn't always do. He's basically at that level what you want Michael Bradley to be at this level. So I happen to love Emerson Heineman, been a big fan. I think with Zlalem, his big thing is his physical stature.
He's also 2 years younger than Heineman. So he does have a lot more kind of time to get there, I believe.
Right.
But that being said, there was
he's also getting first team action in at Scotland
at Rangers, which is one way to toughen you up. That's going to the School of Hard Knocks.
In all honesty, when he got loaned out to them, a lot of Arsenal fans and maybe some U.S. fans, because it was sort of a weird fit. Scotland's a physical game. Mm-hmm. It's a lot like the Premier League, but
it's more physical, more less physical. Skilled.
Yeah,
it's very CONCACAF-y, if that's what you want to go.
So. Everyone was kind of worried about how that would fit, but it actually played out kind of well. I mean, Rangers fans loved him. There's obviously going to be a physical maturation that happens. And I think just by virtue of him playing in Europe, he's just going to progress further.
Right. And
because it's in Europe, you either show out or get out. They don't mess around. And so you have to really prove your worth every time.
Here's a point I want to make about him. We're Arsenal fans, so we see Arsenal on a daily basis. We hear about a lot of different prospects, and he was maybe not the most heralded prospect, but there was a lot of Arsenal fans who are very excited about the possibility of him making it. That being said, he's in a good position in that even if he doesn't make it at Arsenal, he's going to have a long career in Europe just because of the way he's at, the way he already got playing time in Scotland. He's at an age, and if you look at him from a technical perspective, he's probably, I believe, going to be a more technical player than Hyman.
Yeah, in all honesty, he's probably better technically than most of our seniors.
Just about, right. So we're in a lot of the young kids. I mean, people who are not even 20. I'm looking for either MLS or Europe, the 23 to 27 who by 2018 are going to be
in their prime.
Like your Perry Kitchens. Like Perry Kitchens is an example for me. He's got some experience. He's not too old. He's going to be peaking athletically, in theory.
And he's been playing well.
So, like, where are other guys like that?
Well, the frustration with Perry Kitchens, if you want to go off him, is he was playing at a team that's probably not even the stature of the team Zalala was playing for, you know? It's like, I was kind of frustrated because I was like, he's playing for one of the better teams in Scotland, but I was like, I'd rather you play for even a mid-table championship team, or maybe a Bournemouth, or a... Because, you know, you look at Emerson Hyman, he's playing at a club much bigger than Perry Kitchens. And I feel like it's one of those, if you're going to go to Europe,
here's the other thing, you know, and I know you want to focus on a little bit older, but a Miazga may be ready by the time the next World Cup rolls around.
Something very interesting about Miazga is I don't see him as a starter for the United States if we keep it the way we are, because I think Cameron Carter-Vickers...
Like, you compare his skills and combine his skill set with a John Brooks, and it's lethal.
Like, both of those, I believe both... Cameron Carter-Vickers is at Spurs. I really believe he's going to get to a point where he levels up from Spurs. But I really think that he will be world-class, I really believe. I think him and John Brooks...
So more upside than Miazga.
Yes, I believe they both
have... Because I don't think Miazga offers the same level... The difference is Miazga doesn't have the same level of athleticism and pace of play. But this is also going to Klinsmann's point. You know, you can kind of see, and if you've watched Germany for the last 10 years or whatever, it feels like they have center backs growing on trees. You know, they have center backs for days. And for the last 10 years, we haven't been able to find a center back remote. I mean, Matt Beisler's fine. But if that's the guy we're kind of like trying to get, or an Alvarado, or those guys, we're reaching hard for those guys. So you can kind of see the depth of talent that's coming up, even at that one position. But I don't know. I'm trying to think who in MLS that I really like.
Again, I'm an MLS fan. I like watching MLS. But I feel like a lot of players, like a Will Trapp, they kind of almost plateau once they get to a... Because there's not the depths of competition that we're going to talk about. Because we talked about that on the Miles of South a lot. There's not the same level of, you know, if Will Trapp has a bad game for Columbus, they're probably stick it out with him. You know, you ride the slump. In England, if he was playing, even in the championship, you have a bad game, a few bad games, you're gone. You know, you're sitting on the bench and you're...
Case in point, look at DeAndre Yedlin.
He had... just a couple bad games.
And if he was in...
Against high-level competition, no less. It wasn't like he's playing scrubs. He's playing high-level players.
And if he's in Seattle and has three or four bad games, they're not benching him.
So Jordan Morris should be in the next player pool, yes?
Right, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And Jordan Morris frustrates me in some ways because it's like even if you compare him to a Hyman or a Zilalem, he's so behind technically. Even though you look at a Pulisic, same thing. I mean, Pulisic is 17 years old, and Jordan Morris is 23 now, and Pulisic is so much better. Like, his first touch is so much more clean.
Right.
And that's something that kind of worries me. That being said, he stretches the field. You put him and Bobby Wood, those are two very athletic players. And I love watching players with pace who can really just change the game, because that's something we have just been desperate for. If you watch the 2014 World Cup, oh my God, like,
Creative players, we don't
we
have
don't
them.
have, like, we were playing Zusi on one wing, but Doi on another wing, and Clint Dempsey up top. And those are not bad players. But if we could have had a.
Basically, what we've been like since Josie's hamstrings are crap.
Yeah.
We've just been basically telling teams we will play in front of you,
Exactly.
and so the other team, our opponents understand that, and we don't have these technical players that are able to break them down. So
Yeah.
let's kind of bring everything to a close. I mean, obviously, let's get our Beckerman, Wandos, Howards. They got some spot. That creates some spots. Obviously, Nagby. For me, I'm not sold on Nagby, but he hasn't got a fair shot in my opinion. So
Exactly.
I'd like to see some more of him. Maybe Perry Kitchen somehow get
Yeah.
Fabian Johnson
The
pushed out in the field.
Nagbe thing is kind of intriguing because I've thought about it too. I think it's one of those, the most popular player on a football team is the backup quarterback. It's like,
And that's starting to really
and then
happen now.
until that backup quarterback comes in and plays, then you realize he sucks too. But and I'm not saying that Nagbe is terrible. I think he's very good. But some players just don't translate from club to country and or country to club. And I'm not willing to anoint him yet, like some fans are. Like I think people assume because he was someone different that he's somehow gonna be a game changer. And I don't know. I'm one that takes a wait and see approach on a lot of things. I know that's not the way of fans now. It's all knee jerk and right now in the heat of the moment. I didn't say much about it because, like I said, I'm in a wait and see mode on Nagby. He could be very well be great. He could very well be, just a great MLS player and not really break in.
Something I do like about him is he does have the athleticism that I feel like would work well with the Michael Bradley. Because, I mean, we've been saying this since whenever Jermaine Jones came on the scene, and him and Michael Bradley have been our two best central mids, and they were our two best players, but they don't really complement each other like you would like.
One last time, I'm gonna hit this hard, but like for me, I would have not brought Bedoya. I mean, I
Okay.
play him in the pool. I would not have started him every game. I would just, especially the way they had moved Bradley back a level, more of a six in front
Yeah.
of the back. Jermaine Jones is on fire. Let him run. That's Jermaine Jones just wants to do whatever he wants to do.
Let
So
Jermaine
let him
Jones
do
play.
that. Nagby would have been a nice. I think that should have been his time during this tournament. Would have been a nice chance to link those two. Give some athleticism so there's some lateral coverage, and then let's see what he can do. And now we still don't know.
That
And
is the
I think that was a real missed
unknown on this question.
opportunity
And I agree.
for Jurgen Klinsmann, if you're listening.
And well,
Just
something
in
going
case.
forward that's going to be really interesting is you're playing a Michael Bradley who knows where he's going to be in 2 years. But I mean, if unless he really begins to improve, at some point somebody's going to take a spot. Who knows? He could turn into Michael Bradley 2013 and play very well. Then you got Jermaine Jones, 34 years old. And then you got Alejandro Bedoya, who we still don't know his position. He's 29 years old. He's been playing on the team for, 5, 6 years
Yeah,
now.
I'm still just not sure what he's good
We don't
at.
really know. He's one of those.
Tangent alert. This will spin me wildly out of
Yeah.
control, so we cannot talk about that because
Yeah.
but okay, so let's wrap it up.
Okay.
Who is one player you want to see in the next 6 to 12 months, really either get more playing time or make a jump forward?
Mine has always been Emerson Hyman, just because I think he's of that youth movement. I think he's the best one right now and most ready. I know Pulisic, yeah, but I value center mids more than I necessarily would a Pulisic and what he plays, maybe a wide player, because dictating the game from the midfield is far more important than maybe players going for.
In a one way, I want to see Pulisic because he's a player who has probably more upside than any player I've ever seen. And obviously, I was a kid when Landon Donovan came through in 02, and so I don't really remember it as a fan perspective. And that was, 15, 16 years ago. since then, Pulisic is by far, in my opinion, the best player. And he has the technicality, he has the athleticism, he seems to have the mentality that he could really be the next big thing. And at 17 years old, he's got all the time in the world playing at Dortmund. So that's something you got to look forward to. Also, I want to see Cameron Carter-Vickers, maybe not in the 6 to 12 months. It might be going towards 2022. That being said, he's I don't watch too much of the youth national team, though, to be honest. But he's by far the best player. It was almost like watching when I watched the French U20 team a few years back, and they had Paul Pogba and a couple other players who were just
Yeah, his athleticism just
it
jumps
just
through the
Paul
TV.
yeah, like when Paul Pogba was playing for the youth national team in France, it was just like men against boys, because it really was. He was about 6'3" and a grown man and just technically better than everybody. And it was like watching that when he was playing, even against good teams. I feel like if he can improve technically enough, he could come on very soon. And even if he's playing a right back, I feel like he could play the Sergio Ramos type role where he moves over as a kid, plays some outside back, gets some experience, and then comes back and plays central mid
I
later.
like that.
And then maybe that would be a way to get some of these other players, whether it's Yedlin or Tabian Johnson, forward. That's something to look into. It's honestly, I think he's 18, 19 now. So maybe for 2018, because I mean nobody had heard of DeAndre Yedlin in 20 even 12. So that's something to look into. Maybe not. So
Okay. So the guys behind at US Soccer Feed have been my guests. Thanks for rehashing the Copa and looking ahead to hopefully World Cup 2018. But thanks for coming on, and we'll talk to you later.
All right,
thanks for
appreciate
having
it.
us.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Soccer Nomad podcast. Let me know what you think by commenting on the Podomatic page or giving the show a review and rating on iTunes. And help me spread the word by sharing this podcast with a fellow soccer fan. You can follow me on Twitter at AustinLong1974, and please visit my blog soccernomad.wordpress.com for posts on kits, memories, and more. Thanks again.